Heavenly Father,
Heavenly Father,
Divine Mother,
Divine Mother,
Friend, Beloved God,
Great Masters,
Jesus Christ,
Babaji Krishna,
Lahiri Mahashaya, Swami Sri Yukteswar, Beloved Guru, Paramahansa Yoganandaji, Saints of all religions, beloved friend and guide, Swami Kriyananda, we humbly bow to you all. Beloved Master, open your flow of grace so that we might go through the process of self-transformation that leads to our opening to thy light, that leads to our becoming that light. We are thine. Be thou ours. Om. Peace. Amen. So I may cough from time to time. Just those of you who might be bothered by such things, don't be. I have a little allergy to some sort of a pollen that probably has been very prevalent. We had a lot of rain this year, and so I think the pollen count got high, and so I'm not feeling at all ill, but I do cough. So we're going to talk today about basically the process of transformation. Some people know that we're starting a new work in India, an institute based on Master's teachings, and especially with the flow of the Bhagavad Gita. And so we'll talk about that later today in the questions and answers. We don't want to take up time during the morning class. But there are very, very exciting developments going on there. Very expansive, very beautiful. But what we have done over the last few months is to look at the question of the fact that Master said that millions of people will find God through his scripture, the essence of the Bhagavad Gita. And so we looked at that question and asked ourselves, indeed, how are millions going to find God through that? Because, well, it's a beautiful book. Not that many people have bought it. Not that many people are going to read it. And even if you read a book, that doesn't mean that you're going to be really transformed by that book. With some rare exceptions, one being the autobiography of a yogi, which has transformed the lives of millions of people. But the Gita is more esoteric and a little harder to get into than that. And so we asked ourselves, how are people going to find God through that? And we meditated on it. And in India, the Gita has been taught for millennia. And it is also currently being taught all over the country, but it isn't understood very deeply. One woman had a beautiful statement. She said, I grew up reading the Gita, but it was as if I poured milk over a deity and worshipped it. Now, for the first time after reading Master's interpretations, I can drink that milk. And so the essence of the Bhagavad Gita is really a manual for daily living and a manual for self-transformation. But it has to be approached in such a way that it can be seen as that, and then, more importantly, can motivate a person and be practically applied in their life. So this is the signature course of what we're doing with the Institute, which is meant to reach millions of people. So as we said, and I'll say just very briefly, Ananda's work is that exists now is basically for people who self-define themselves as devotees. You come into this church, this beautiful community, the community of people here, and it's quite obvious that everybody is on the spiritual path. Krishna in the Gita says, 1 out of 1,000 will seek me. Well, what about the other 999? Now, we aren't going to be able to reach the bottom level of that. But let's say we can go from 1 out of 1,000 to 100 out of 1,000. Well, that means that our work will be 100 times bigger than what it is now. So the reach will be 100 times bigger. That's what we're trying to do. So it's not necessarily for a person self-defining themselves as a devotee, but it's for a person who wants self-improvement. So with that, we looked at Master's Bhagavad Gita interpretation, and we looked at the question of, is there a practical teaching here that can be expressed in a way that people can really absorb it and really use it and really have transformation in it? And so we were told by many people in India that don't look for a progression in the Gita. It just does not exist there. It's shlokas, many hundreds of shlokas, and he'll touch on many different themes. Krishna talking to Arjuna will touch on many, many different themes throughout that, but it isn't any kind of a linear progression. And that's true if you take it on the level of the individual shlokas. But if you look, and this was an inspiration that came, while four of us were together in a retreat in the Himalayas, only about 80 miles away from Babaji's cave. And so in that same area where Krishna and the Pandavas had lived in ancient India, all in that area, it was as if the inspiration came. Don't look at the individual shlokas. Look at the themes that are there. And if you look at the themes, then indeed there is a progression of consciousness expressed in the Gita that takes you all the way from the beginning, which the beginning of the Gita starts with the inner battle or the battle between the two armies. And so those of you who know, Arjuna asks Krishna to take him between the two armies so he can see the two sides fighting each other. Well, if you take that on an outer level, it's just naming off warriors. But Master interpreted that as it is our inner qualities, the downward pulling qualities, and the upward moving qualities that are in conflict with each other. So one great understanding is that the Gita is an inner scripture, not an outer scripture, and that it has this progression of consciousness. And so it starts with the inner battle, which is where all of us have to start. And it ends with self-realization, which again is where all of us have to end. And so in between are very clear stages by which we can understand and go through a process of self-transformation. And Devi's going to talk more specifically about that.
Okay, well, we called the course Gita Navratna, the 9 gems from the Bhagavad Gita. And as we had a wonderful retreat, as Jyotish said, in this beautiful retreat facility, looking at the magnificent mountain of Nanda Devi every day, and we saw that there were 9 themes that the more we thought about them, they really were progressional. What we'll talk about today, because we have limited time, is the first of the nine only. So that's the inner conflict, that there are forces, and Jyotish will speak about this in much more detail, but forces of materialism, of outward energy that we all have, and then there's the forces of upliftment and interiorization, and they're always a battle until we can resolve them, until the waves equal out. So that's the inner battle. And then the next gem is the imperishable soul, because we're afraid, and this is one of the key concepts that Master expounds in his explanation. Arjuna looks at the enemy warriors and he said, I can't kill them. They're my family. They're a part of myself. And Master explains what really that is about is we look at our materialistic traits and we say, I can't get rid of those. They define who I am. They're a big part of my consciousness. And so we're afraid, just as Arjuna, he was not afraid, but reluctant. He said, I can't fight this battle. And that's what each of us do on a certain level all the time. I can't fight this battle. I don't want to give up being sarcastic. I like being sarcastic. I like making little cutting remarks, whatever it is, you know, from big things to little things. And so the inner battle, and then that goes, the next theme is the imperishable soul that Krishna says to Arjuna, don't worry about it. You're not going to die. You can't die. You're eternal. Who you really are is eternal. And then that gives us the confidence to say, I'm not going to lose anything. I'll just transmute it. I'll transform all these lower tendencies. And so the imperishable soul is the second one. And once we begin to get confident and trusting in the process, then we can say, oh, I want to offer myself into this process. And that's the third of the gems, self-offering. I want to do this. I'm not holding anything back. I want to humbly and completely enter into this battle. Third gem. Fourth gem is, and now we kind of start changing gears a little bit, and we'll recap. Next gem is directional development. And this is all about the gunas, this theme runs through the Gita over and again, that there are these three qualities, the downward deadening energy, the tamasic, the activating energy, rajasic, and the uplifting and light energy, sattvic. And this, of course, is one of the bases of our Education for Life school system as well. But once we realize I want to enter the battle, we have to start thinking, what am I really working on personally? What are the forces at play within me? Not just theory, oh yeah, I shouldn't do this and I should do this and he really shouldn't do that. But what do I need to work on? What are the forces within me that are downward pulling and what are upward pulling? And how can I develop a good strategy so I'm really using my strengths, my strong warriors? So directional development. Then we get the next two gems, get into the daily life, how the Gita is a manual for daily life. Once we say, okay, I've really got to, I want to work on these things. I'm not going to disappear. I know I'm going to stay. My soul is imperishable. I want to give myself, and I see the pattern of progression. Then comes the next two gems, karma and dharma, to do your duty in the world, to act, because it's through action that we learn. We learn our spiritual lessons. We saw so often with Swamiji, when someone would come to him for counsel, he very often wouldn't say, oh, well, this is your problem. He would give them something to do, because he knew in the doing, in the karma, in the action, they would learn. And so then from karma, the next gem is dharma, to feel what is the bigger than yourself, but living in a spirit of righteousness, of being a channel in this world of divine consciousness. So karma and dharma. And then the last three gems, and these are sort of Jnana Yoga, Bhakti Yoga, and Raja Yoga, Karma Yoga we've already talked about, but knowing truth, devotion, and self-realization. And as we began talking about this, we want this course to be very much not just one more lecture, which you've probably had many of them on the Bhagavad Gita Master's Explanation, but how we can work, give you tools to go deeper in this process of transformation. So as we just, we'll talk about this more, but we just had a 5-day intensive planning with four of our friends from India who came over, who are our team on the signature course and the Institute. And we said, you know, what is this process that we all have to go through in self-transformation? First is understanding. You have to say, what is, why am I not happy? Why is life not working for me? It's an inner battle. You have to understand what forces are at play. And then the next part of it is, there are four stages of self-transformation. First is understanding what the process is. Second is owning it. And that's self-offering. When you say, I see, it isn't just the warriors on a sheet of paper. This is my problem. It's not somebody else's problem. It's my problem. And I need to do something about it. So that's the second. First, understanding, owning. Third is acting, getting the tools and techniques, and this is, Master has so many of them, but getting the tools and the techniques to really enable us to change. And then the fourth, and that's karma, dharma, all of these. And then the last stage is, in this process of self-transformation, is committing. So you have to understand, you have to own it, you have to act on it, and you have to commit to this process. And that commitment is the last three gems: seeking truth, devotion, and self-realization. Because part of the committing, and this is implied, but in a way, it's the most important part of all. When we commit ourselves to God, He commits Himself to us. Well, He's always committed to us, but He takes an active part. Once we say, Lord, I am committed, whatever the price, to transformation. I want to leave this battle behind me, and I want to find the peace of my own soul. I am committed to this process. Then God, like Master said, very good. Now I can get to work on you. So it's a beautiful process of transformation. What we'll be working with this morning and the time we have remaining is only the first gem. This will be a 3-day intensive course when we roll out the whole thing. But so we'll be working on the inner conflict only. So we'll begin.
So the inner conflict. So the Gita really begins before the Gita. It begins with the Mahabharata, which is one of the great, great scriptures, one of the two great scriptures of India. It goes back to Vedic times. And in the Mahabharata, it is the evolution of the soul and a whole process. It looks on first reading like it's a lot of characters and a lot of genealogy and what makes sense and why are they acting this way, what do they do, all of that. It's very, very impactful but confusing. And unless you have a guide that can help you interpret what's really going on, it seems very, quite bizarre to all of us. But all of these characters in the Mahabharata are also characters within our own self. And so it begins to talk about how the soul comes out of the, one might say, the unified state with God. Then God puts part of His consciousness into movement, which is duality. And that duality creates all of the outward manifestation. So in that process, the soul, which is part of God always, takes on the sense of duality or the sense of an ego. Because an ego, Master said, the ego is the soul identified with an individual body and personality. And so the unified field that we live in and that we actually are all of a sudden shrinks down to one little ego, one little life, one little body, one little personality. And so it's from, but that's where our consciousness is. So it's from that point that we have to begin to reverse the downward, one might say, the devolution from the soul back to the evolution that brings us back to the soul. And that begins by understanding and working with the qualities of the ego. And so as the Mahabharata comes down, there's this huge conflict between two clans, one of the Pandavas, the other the Kauravas. And they try to make peace. They try everything possible. But the Kauravas, the downward pulling tendencies, are so threatened by the upward pulling tendencies. In other words, the ego, our ego, your ego, my ego, is threatened by the process of self-realization. And so they're trying to kill off those upward moving tendencies within us, our ego. So that downward pulling part of the ego, I should say, is trying to kill off the upward moving evolution. It's a strange, bizarre way of creating something. But Master, one time, Swami asked him, do people incarnate on other planets? And Master said, oh yes, they only incarnated on Earth. They'd catch on too quickly. So from our point of view, it seems this agonizing process that we have to go through. From God's point of view, it's just quite an entertaining movie, you know? And it's he wrote the script. He's all the actors. He's all the drama. And he's just, it's his own dream. And so it's only because we're caught in the limitation of the ego that we think this process is strange or difficult. So anyway, we are caught in the ego. We do have to work with it. So where we begin, once we realize that we have to fight this war, is that Arjuna chooses Krishna as his guide. In other words, the aspiring devotee chooses as our guide the light of God manifested in some way. For us, generally speaking, that represents Master. That Master was no longer caught in the ego. He realized himself as the soul. And because he realized himself as the universal soul, he was able to guide us through the process that we all have to go through to get from here to there. So Krishna, Arjuna asks Krishna to take him out between the two armies so that he can see who he's going to fight. Now, if you're just reading that on the surface, you have no idea what's going on. It's a list of characters, list of warriors, and each of those warriors, if you've been brought up in the culture like Sagar and Sai Ganesh and other of our Indian friends, if you've been brought up in that culture, you hear about, Duryodhana. And you've heard dozens of stories about Duryodhana or Bhishma or whoever the characters are. Anyway, you're intrigued, you're caught up, but it's all on the surface. If it's them and not me, it isn't very impactful. And so what Master with great genius did. It really started with Lahiri, but we have the end result with Master. He explained what's going on in that, and he explained that what Arjuna is seeing and what Krishna is allowing him to see are the characters that we have to, the downward pulling tendencies within ourselves and the upward pulling tendencies. Who are the warriors on each side? Arjuna asks. And they start naming them off. But what's really going on is that, as Devi said, knowledge, so you can understand this. You can even understand Master's interpretation. Okay, we've got these tendencies. Wonderful, wonderful. Oh, we've got these downward pulling tendencies. Terrible, terrible. Oh, well, I suppose I should do something about that. But we have to begin to come to grips with our own part in this. And so that's where we begin to move from knowing to owning. And so we're going to go through an exercise here of you helping determine what your real battles are. Now, it isn't that easy. You know, you've got a handout here, and it's really just a catalyst for you to think. It's some of the warriors on the two sides, the good side and the bad side. And we're going to ask you to kind of glance at that. We'll do it relatively quickly, but glance at that and see what particular warriors you're fighting in this lifetime. But somebody back there needs... At any rate, what we're really trying to get to here is for you to look at your own tendencies and we're going to kind of boil it down so that you pick one or two things that you feel that you really need to work on. Now, let me say that don't take it as being too obvious. Because the warriors, the tendencies that you know you have to work on are the easiest part of it. The enemy that you can see is an easier enemy to fight than that which you cannot see. So we have kind of three levels of once we begin saying, all right, I am going to have to work with my tendencies. We have the first level, which is, oh, I know I have these faults, or I know I have these aspirations, and let me work on that. Underneath that are subconscious tendencies that may not be obvious to us, but they are very, very determinative in our life. And so... Subconscious tendencies come not only from experiences in this life, but more importantly from past lives. And they may not present themselves very clearly. So Devi mentioned sarcasm. So sarcasm, you can kind of get a grip on, oh yeah, I am sarcastic. I shouldn't do that. But if you stop there, you have to ask yourself not, oh, I'm sarcastic, how do I stop that? That's like, I'm bleeding, how do I stop the bleeding? You have to ask yourself what the disease is that's causing me to bleed. What is the tendency underneath the surface that I have that causes me to be sarcastic? Am I carrying fear? Am I carrying a sense of inadequacy? Am I carrying... So, see what I'm getting at? That lying underneath the something that you can identify is going to be a causative aspect in your consciousness. And if you don't come to grips with that, you can stop your sarcasm for a year or two or a week or a day, finally get a grip on that. But if you don't come to grips with what is underlying that, causing that pattern to manifest, you're just going to continue to reincarnate with that same problem. And so pick out your warriors, but don't just stop at the warrior and or the obvious battle. Try to look and just be calm and try to feel what underlying tendency is causing that. So that's the first level is that which you can see. Second level is that which, generally speaking, you can't see, but rises up. And Swami said, celebrate when some tendency that you don't like in yourself rises up so that you can see it. He said, it's always been there, but now you can get a grip on it. So part of the process this morning is try to feel underneath that. And then there's a third category, and we won't try to get to this category today, but the third category, just so that you know about it, is that which you actively keep hidden. Those things that are so frightening or so threatening to you that you actively stop working on that. We're working with a healer in India, and one of the theories is that as we incarnate into this incarnation, there are certain patterns that we bring with us. But by the time we're 7 years old, we form a filter so that we don't even see, we don't even want to work on those things that are too threatening to us, or, you know, threatening to the ego. It isn't us. The soul wants that all cleared out. The ego wants to hold on to it because it keeps us in separation. That's the genius of the Gita, is that it, and the second step, you see the imperishable soul and the ego, and those two are in conflict. So, anyway, you have two things here. You have a chart of the various warriors, and you also have Master's psychological chart. And we're only going to spend a few minutes on this. You can take these with you and you can do this exercise in much more depth. So we'll spend about, between 5 and 10 minutes where you look at this, and really this is only a catalyst for you to pick. At the end, we want you to pick one thing that you really want to work on. And then we're going to go through an exercise of working on that. Okay, is that clear? I don't know. It should be on there. Well, maybe it was a misprint. Anyway, Sahadev, for those of you who may not be familiar, he represents niyama, or the power to avoid evil actions. So those disciplines that you've undertaken that says, I'm just going to not do that. As I say, this is really just a catalyst for you to see the things that are pulling you down, and it's equally important to see the strengths that you have, those things that you've developed that are helping you. And so we'll let you continue with that. Pick your greatest strength and pick the thing that you want to fight.
Well, we've done together the first two steps in this process of transformation. We've done the understanding, the concepts that there are opposing forces within us. By the way, we're not standing now at the request of the tech team, because it's a better video if we don't stand, but our energy is still going out. And one of our great assets on this path, although it's not readily available, and I was sorry you didn't mention it last night, is of course Mulliner's Bakyuapo. And what greater motivating, positive, uplifting quality than that? So we did the understanding, and now we're beginning the owning. This is mine. This is something I really need to work on and to take it seriously. One time, Swami was giving someone some pretty pointed feedback about something they needed to correct in their behavior. And the person said, I understand, Swami. And Swami said, I don't care if you understand or not. I want you to change. And so now we come, we start moving. I tried to spare you, but...
Too many of them already knew.
But he did. He did change. It wasn't just theory. So the next point is looking at our strategies. And so we're going to have a little exercise, but I'll give you an explanation so you understand. We all have problems in life. And what do we do about it? Sometimes people say, oh, I'm overwhelmed, I give up, I'm going to take drugs, I'm going to drink, whatever it is. That's ultimately not a very good life strategy. But we all come up with strategies. And where do those strategies come from? They are dependent on our level of consciousness. So Albert Einstein, one of the great visionaries of our time, said, a problem is never solved on the level at which it was created. So if you have a problem in life, let's say someone's really mean to you. So your strategy comes on the kind of most basic non-productive level is I'll respond in kind. If someone's really mean to me, I'm going to be really mean back to them. And I think we've all tried that. It's not a very effective strategy. Nothing gets resolved. Another strategy is, well, if they're going to be really mean to me, I'll just avoid them. I won't take their emails, I won't take their texts, calls. And still, that's not a very effective strategy because it's not addressing the problem from a higher level. So now we come to the beginning of the process of acting. Acting on the problems or the situations that we own. And there are three levels of consciousness. There's the subconscious, that's, I'm going to just hide from life. These problems are too much. I'm going to lose myself in substance abuse. That's the subconscious approach. Then there's the conscious approach, and that's like for like, you know, eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. Just whatever someone gives back to me, I'm going to give it right back to them. And that's the conscious level. And again, it's not very effective. But then there's the third level that Master emphasizes so much, and that's the superconscious level. And in truth, that's the only place that we can effectively win our battle when we start drawing superconscious solutions. So how do we do that? What are superconscious solutions? Superconscious solutions are those that come from our highest intuitive soul awareness that is born through deep meditation, through attunement, through life offering to God. And so to win the battle, we have to start drawing superconscious tools that are going to help us to really effectively fight the battle. And so we're going to do an exercise now that has three parts. The first part is, and just listen to all three of them before you start doing anything, the first part is, think of a problem that you have right now in your life, not theoretical, not, something real in your life right now. And then I want you to write down the strategies that you are using right now to deal with them. That's phase one, part one. Part two is we're going to have a 10-minute meditation, guided meditation, and we'll start using the tools, some pranayama, some meditation, some holding our consciousness at the spiritual eye, the seat of divine consciousness, super conscious awareness. And we'll do this for 10 minutes. And then we'll revisit part one, where we look at our strategies that we've come up with only from the conscious mind. And we'll start trying to draw super conscious solutions. I've done this with groups before, and people have very interesting experiences because after you meditate on a problem, or not even on a, don't meditate on the problem, but lift your consciousness, you'll come up with very different solutions, very different strategy in the battle of life. So let's do part one. Think of a real problem, and we'll take 5 minutes for this, that you are dealing with right now. And write it down, and then write down your solutions, your strategy that you are using for with this problem right now. 5 minutes. I'll lead us in a guided meditation because Jyotish is coughing too much. Okay, sit upright. And let's consciously relax the body, starting at the feet, calves, knees. Feel warmth and space moving up the body, thighs, abdomen. Feel your breath beginning to slow down, become calm, and feel your body beginning to relax. Relax your hands. Upper arms and upper arms. Relax the stomach and abdomen. Relax your heart. Relax your upper chest and shoulders. Throat. Jaw. Facial muscles. Eyes. Forehead. And brain. Feel your brain, all the millions of little neural circuits beginning to calm down. Feel your brain filled with light, a steady, glowing light, soothing. Now bring your awareness to the point between the eyebrows and feel the light focusing there. Raise your eyes gently to that light with closed lids. Feel the light pouring from the medulla to the spiritual eye through the brain. And now with all the relaxed, released energy which had been held in tension in the body, feel that energy moving up the spine from the base of the spine, the root chakra, the center of outer security and materialistic self-protection. Feel that energy moving up the spine, the light, to the next chakra, the sacral center, the center of desires, and sexual energy. Feel all that energy interiorized, moving up the spine. To the lumbar center, the Manipur chakra, the center of power, but also self-control. Feel the light illuminating that chakra, releasing tightly held energy there, moving up the spine to the Anahat chakra, the dorsal center. Visualize there a closed flower bud, a lotus. And as the energy floods up through the spine, feel the petals of that lotus slowly begin to open as the heart's energy, the likes and dislikes, the emotions, the reactions. The more that heart's energy is held tightly closed, the least we can ever find happiness in this world. So feel those petals opening, that energy releasing upward, upward, to the cervical center of the throat. Feel a great calmness filling your being, rooted in wisdom, rooted in deep interiorized state of mind. Feel that energy moving ever upward, touching the medulla, and then moving through the brain once more to the spiritual eye. And feel all the energy which has been locked up, the warriors that have held sway in the kingdom of our soul. Feeling the energy being withdrawn from the negative warriors, transmuted and infusing our divine heroes with strength. And the victory of our soul nature as representative of the soul merging with the Christ consciousness, the Krishna consciousness. The battle of life ultimately is fought in the deep spine. And let's conclude this with using another tool in another spiritual arrow in our quiver, the superconscious exercises to make us aware of the different levels of consciousness. First, with downward casting eyes, mentally repeat, through slowly drifting waters, I sink into subconsciousness. Through slowly drifting waters, I sink into subconsciousness. Then open your eyes and look straight ahead. You can look at one of the masters. With a burst of energy, I rise to greet the world. With a burst of energy, I rise to greet the world. And now lifting your eyes upward, fixing the energy at the spiritual eye, mentally repeat, I awaken thy light. I am joyful. I am free. I awake in thy light. Now, come back to the first part of our exercise and see now, think of the problem that you had addressed and see what solutions come to you now in dealing with that problem. Would anyone like to share if that was a helpful experience?
So I thankfully realized I had been energetically, I'll say actively energetically working on things, and now clarifying, oh yeah, the next step is action. And the attitude thing is great because you can just paint that all over it. So that's a good key to remember.
Good. Anybody else want to share? You don't have to share what you wrote down, but just what the process was like for you.
One of the things I noticed in the first part, I mentioned it to Eloisa here, is writing down those conscious solutions of just how ineffective they really were. And it totally shifted in that third part. It's great.
Good. That's what's supposed to happen. Okay. Anybody else?
I noticed that the super conscious solutions are uncomfortable.
How so?
How so? Well, you know, when you were saying like it, it's a blessing when something gets activated.
Yeah.
So it's this combination of activating that it activates and transforms. It just so the my strategy would be avoid. Let's not do anything that's going to be activating that. And the solution tends to both activate and transform it.
Yeah.
And so part of the clue for me that it's super conscious is it is not my idea. It just really isn't. I'm really aware of it.
That's really right. Yeah.
Another aspect of the super consciousness, as you all know, is that if your solution to the problem that you're working on has an us and them aspect to it, in super consciousness, there is no us and them. Everything is one. And so if you can raise the energy to that level and see it in a unity, then wholly different ideas and strategies occur.
Yeah, I saw a great quote recently from the wonderful enlightened being Ramana Maharshi, where he simply said, a very few words, he simply said, there is no other. There is only yourself in many different forms. Okay, any last things people want to share? Thank you for sharing. I know it's not easy, but it makes people feel a part of the experience.
I noticed that when I was first thinking of the problem and the conscious solution, that I was just looking at it with a heaviness already. So there would be no way that I could, you know, from that attitude come up with something that would feel light and uplifting. And so after the meditation part, when I went back to it, the first thing that came to my mind was the word play. And that just wasn't even in the universe, you know, when 10 minutes before. So lightness, it brought lightness and a sense of play. And then, like Rita said, you can just paint that, you know. And then solutions that come from there, wow, those are completely different.
Yeah.
I was thinking of a particularly wiggly and very important situation with dear friends that is going on. And, you know, there were some conscious thoughts of, well, maybe we could try this, maybe we could try that. And then when I meditated, I was given a gift from the Beatles, which is, all you need is love. You know, and somehow that love, but it's not just like, you know, song. It was really a way to see the oneness of God in each other and in all of the situation. And from that place, then it seemed like little branchlets of things were flowing out, like, you know, forgiveness and understanding and gratitude, and all these little pieces were flowing out, but that one strong vibration and consciousness of love just seemed like that was going to be the solution, could be a solution.
I did not realize at the time when I wrote down what I was doing about my problem was actually trying to solve the problem by myself with all sorts of just physical material checklists. And I was just writing down things that were coming to me after the meditation. And at first glance, they almost look like they don't have anything to do with the problem. But what they had to do was with bringing God and Master into the approach and concentrate on that so much more that that would end up essentially changing everything, you know, attitude. So I was trying to do it by myself.
Yeah.
And I don't have to.
Very good.
Last one.
It always takes a little while for people to get going, and then they start coming.
But it's very helpful to
share.
I found that after the meditation, I was able to really break down the different parts of the problem into the underlying issues that I was kind of dealing with on a conscious level. But, you know, I still felt in kind of a big muddle when I thought of it on the conscious level. But right away in the meditation, something that I just read that Swami said in the book we're studying in our KSG meetings just popped into my mind. And it's like, you know, it's just so meaningful. And it was what he said about sometimes a swath of trees has to be cut down to keep the fire from spreading. And for what I'm, the issue I was dealing with, that like really meant, I mean, it really kind of cleared something up inside of me, and very meaningful.
Very good, very good. Okay, so I think we'll move on. So what have we gone through this morning? We've talked about the theme of the inner battle. We've tried to give you the concept, the understanding. And then through the exercise, we've tried, the first one, tried to get you to own it. This is mine. Then through looking for solutions and through practicing a meditative technique, we've acted on it. And now the last part, anybody remember what the fourth step was? Yay! Somebody was listening. The fourth step was committing. And so now Jatish is going to do a final discussion and exercise to help you commit to what this process is.
So hopefully you have come up with, after the meditation, another kind of a solution to work on whatever this problem was. And let's also hope that after you've owned it, that you understand that that solution is not a solution of changing something outward, but is a solution having to do with your own self-transformation. And so, having said that, excuse me, our final exercise is we're going to take about 5 minutes for this, but think about an action plan by which you can, first over the next week, then over the next 6 months, and then permanently try to activate that new understanding or new solution. So that, and then we're going to end by you looking at what you've written down and really committing yourself to doing that practice that you've come up with. So write down something that you're going to be willing to commit your energy to in a process of self-transformation. And then we're going to end by taking that. So if you need to write that on a separate paper because you want to keep notes, do that, because we're going to take that commitment out and we're going to offer it into the light of God in a fire ceremony. So think of how you're going to activate it over the next week, meaning short term and immediately, how you're going to activate it over the next 6 months, intermediate term, and how you're going to activate it continuing beyond that.
I suggest that you make a duplicate copy. So make two copies. We'll throw one in the fire and ask God to bless it, but then you go home and put one on your altar or ask God to receive it.
Teaching a week-long course on Patanjali, and at the end we were going around and sharing, and there was one fellow who had a delightful sense of humor. Anyway, what he said was, you know, when I came here, I was really confused. And after I was studying Patanjali for a week, I'm still confused, but at a much higher level. So our hope for this class is that you're still wanting transformation, but at a higher level than when you came in this morning.
Master's teachings, really, they represent both the depths of yogic practices, Kriya Yoga, which is one of the highest techniques given to mankind for self-liberation, for liberation, self-realization. But they also represent very, very practical life strategies. And really what our masters brought was to show the unity that deep spiritual practices and understanding is not separate from the world of effective, successful, happy lives on a day-to-day basis. And what our job is to do the work, to say, where I am right now, not to judge yourself, that's such a useless practice, but just to say, someone had a t-shirt that said, please be patient with me, I am a work in progress. We are all works in progress. And Master gave us tools and teachings for self-transformation. And the more we can go deep in them and using these gems from the Gita to really realize that this is a very ancient, ancient wisdom that was given to the world. And then our gurus, as it says in the festival, it was given new clothing by our line of gurus, so that it can be practical for our life today, which the outward pulls are tremendous, absolutely tremendous. But we are warriors. We are masters warriors to show people we can live in the world, we can be successful, we can overcome our limitations. And it's not just for the yogis in the Himalayas or the saints in monasteries. It's for everyday people. And that's the mission of our masters today. So it's really thrilling to understand what they came to bring, what we can do with it, and how we can ground it into the world so that people can say, hey, they're just like me, but it really works. So we have a big part to play in the mission of our masters. and this approach through the Gita, I think, and as you can kind of extrapolate, we do this with each of these nine gems, the Navratna, and by the end of it, it's a very powerful experience, but we just had time to do this little bit, and you get a taste of it. And we'll talk about it more, but we'll be rolling out the whole course starting in India in November. Or excuse me, September. Okay, so we can go outside and we can take off all our little paraphernalia.
So this is a session for questions and answers. And let's start by concentrating on what we did this morning. If anything was obscure or you didn't understand, or even if you want to make comments, that's fine. Then when we have that done, we'll just range into any questions that you want, including pi r squared, which generally they're round. But
maybe this is tiny, but when you used the word karma before in the original exposition, you were talking about karma as action.
Uh-huh.
So you weren't going to include karma as current tendencies based on past life?
Both. Yeah, of course.
Okay. Yes. Yeah.
It wasn't clear when it was described. At least
yes,
to me,
you are right.
Yeah.
You're right. Thank
yeah.
you.
Just as a reminder, in two sentences, we covered a three-hour section of what we'll be in. So.
No, but that's a good clarification.
Yeah, no, it's. I noticed that too, so.
Oops, I had a question on, with the four phases, could you say how it's sectioned out? So meaning I got that commitment is knowing truth, devotion, and self-realization. That's the commitment.
Mm-hmm.
So in terms of understanding, owning it, and act, just I'm assuming.
Okay, so understanding would be the inner battle, because that you're really beginning to think this is not something that happens outside me, this is something inside me. And then the imperishable soul and the self-offering, then you begin to think, oh, this is mine. And then with directional development, karma and dharma, then it's starting to act. Okay? We had some very good comments during lunch. I won't name names, but one person said, when we did the exercise about making a strategy and committing, she said, oh no, they're going to make me commit to this. but then she said she realized that, you know, otherwise it's just all theory. James.
When you were talking about the levels of problems, the sort of top level and the subconscious level, and we want to focus on the subconscious because those other ones, it wasn't exactly clear why, but when we went through the exercise, for me, it was easier to just identify one of those.
Okay.
But I found subconscious levels underneath that obvious one.
Right. That's really the essence of it. You start with identifying. Think of it like you're watching a river, and you can see a ripple there. And you look and you see, oh, I see that ripple, and you understand it, and it flows this way and that way. But if you never ask the question of why is that ripple there, what is underneath the surface that's causing that pattern? So that was really what I was getting at. And I was saying often those patterns lie in the subconscious that hasn't yet presented itself to the conscious mind. And we have to at least be open and welcoming for that to that information. And almost like I open my heart, so open the process of self-transformation to those underlying patterns. That was more what I was trying to.
Yeah, when the subconscious mind master describes as the repository of all past impressions, memories, reactions. And so it's just beneath, you know, it's beneath the surface, and we don't realize how much it's influencing the conscious mind and the decisions we make. We think our conscious mind is rational and we have control over it, but all the time it's being the filters of, you know, I like this, I don't like this, because of something that's hidden.
Helpful.
Swami used an interesting example. He said that when a person gives up smoking, you know, it's a process. It's and it's sometimes, okay, sometimes very difficult for the person to give up that smoking. And he said for a period of time, that person will be very judgmental toward others who smoke, because there still is some latent tendency or latent desire. And when that, so that's the subconscious pattern. You wouldn't, that person likely wouldn't identify that the problem is in me, and that's why I'm upset about a person smoking. When they have transited out of that, they recognize that smoking is not good for a person, but they don't have a big emotional reaction about it. So often anger is something of that sort. So you're angry at a person because they are behaving according to your latent tendencies. And so
your own latent tendencies
that you're not ready or willing to accept or address yet. But you see that person acting in a way that you still have some latent tendency, so you externalize it, you project it on that person. So that anger, you can recognize, oh yeah, I'm angry, but you can't recognize what is in you. Rather, you'll point out all the reasons why you should be angry with that person, why you should be upset, why smoking is just a terrible thing, and don't you know about secondhand smoke? And see, you're not getting under your own latent tendency that is causing the emotion. So where there's an emotional reaction, it's due to the fact that you have some latent subconscious tendency, and we're trying to get those, at least the recognition. You may not be able to see clearly, but if you look at that river, you can see, oh yeah, there's a little kind of a darkening there. There must be a rock under the surface.
Say, Ganesh.
You answered the question I was going to ask. I was going to ask, how do you actively find out or investigate those tendencies which you have mentioned some time back that you've actively been trying to hide from since the age of 7. But the second part of the question I had was, is it an appropriate response at any time where you feel I've been running away from this all my life, but I'm not ready yet, I'm going to keep running? Is that a valid stage, or how do you deal with it once you've recognized and you don't still feel ready to fight?
I'm sorry, realize you are ready to fight, or you're not ready? Oh, you're not ready to fight. Yeah, that's a very good thing, but you should never release it. I'm not ready to fight now, but I am building up a momentum. So it's not like saying, where we really undermine ourselves is when we say, it's okay to be this way, when we know it's not. And even if you can't fight that battle then, and Swami also counseled that, fight the battles you know you can take on, even if they're little. Doesn't matter. You gain strength. You know, it's like a child learning how to walk. Maybe they fall down a million times, but they learn. And by falling down, they learn. So you take on the battles you can fight. Don't take on the ones that you don't think you can win at yet. And it's a fine line, because you don't always want them to be easy. But at the same time, you just know that I know this is something I need to work on, and I will hold it there, keep offering it to God, when I can, when I feel I really have a handle on this. And the beautiful thing is, God helps us. We're not in this alone. I mean, if we had to do this all by ourselves, we couldn't. That's the truth. We couldn't. I remember once some years ago, I was having a real challenge with the situation, and I was fighting it with everything I had, affirmations, meditation, prayer, visualization, every tool, every quiver, every arrow in my quiver. And I wasn't getting anywhere, and I was so frustrated. And I went to Swamiji, and I said, Swami, I don't know what else to do. And he said, he kind of shrugged it off, and he said, oh, ultimately, these things are just God's grace. He said, just give it time. And the time came where it was like, wow, that really doesn't have control over me anymore. But I had to do my part. But the ultimate shift, and that's important to remember, we do our part, but the ultimate shift is God's grace, lest we think we're the doers. We're not. We can't pull ourselves up by our bootstraps. We really can't. But we can have the understanding and the owning, acting, and commitment. And then ultimately God says, this person's really trying. Let's help them break through here. And then it's so much sweeter when you just feel like, God, you did that. You took that, I know. So,
for each of the Navratnas, there's an affirmation that goes with it and specific techniques. And so affirmation is one of the primary tools that we have on our path, and we use it often. But Master said what affirmation really is this soul through the ego reaffirming its own latent, its own already developed potential. So the soul is in the ego, and so the ego, we get the conscious mind and the personality to affirm, but we think we're just affirming, trying to develop that quality. We already have it. And so affirmation unleashes the power of the soul, which is already in the state that we're affirming. So that's another tool that you can work on with a problem that you're not ready to face yet. You can have an affirmation that helps you directionally work on that.
Offering the signature course outside of India? I know
Okay. We're just developing it there because we have a team there.
Okay, great. But
definitely. And we it may or may really... We keep using the word institute because it's sort of a catchphrase, but more and more as it evolves, we're not thinking of it as an institute, but a system that will be taught. So it's not a place. It's a system that will be taught, you know, everywhere. And maybe it will be less based on the Gita in the West. Maybe, you know, it can be adaptable. It depends who you're teaching it to. But, one of the things that we wanted to share was we mentioned we had these 5 days with the team of 4 friends from India. And as well as the evolution of the, let's just say system rather than institute, we began realizing that, you know, because we wanted to form a trust, a corporation, you know, for this institute. And we thought, you know, we've got a lot of segments of our work in India. We've got this Paramahansa Yogananda Charitable Trust, which does work with the widows in Vrindavan. We've got the Sangha, which is all the centers and the teaching we do there. We've got this what had originally been conceived of an institute. And we said, you know, rather than forming a trust just around the institute, let's form an umbrella that includes all of these things, because that's more, and maybe we'll have a headquarters where everything is based. And Ananda Sangha India sharing the teachings of Paramahansa Yogananda, and then all these different things will be under, and it'll integrate more. So it's very fun, just as we did the exercise of drawing superconscious solutions. That's what this whole process has been for us. It's not been linear. It's been, you know, this whole concept of the Gita Navratna that just came really in a flash, in a flash. And then it took a lot of time to work it out. And the whole thing of the different thing of transformation, the process of transformation, among four people. It wasn't just one person, but it was like, whoa. So, yes, it will be taught in the West, and we're evolving a system there's just many exciting components. We just, graphics and just a lot. We couldn't, because we just finished, I mean, really, we put them on the plane Friday morning and then came here. So we didn't have time to really develop the graphics, develop the visuals, but it's all coming. And, anyway, it will be taught here, and it's something. Oh, it's another good point. This would be something like our yoga teacher training, and that will be another component of this umbrella organization in India, our meditation teacher training, yoga teacher training. So this would be kind of a complementary course to the level 1, 2, 3, 4 Kriya prep. But it has a broader, audience. That we could take it into corporates, people. That's why Jyotish said, out of 1,000, one seek me. But we want to get those other people, not just the people seeking God, but the people that say, you know, I know my life could be better than it is. And so it will be a system that can be widely taught, and we'll train people in the system, just like we train people. You may know that we have a yoga teacher training course, and we'll train people in it.
And then I think we're probably mostly done with the course itself. So any questions whatsoever, now we're open.
I'm kind of new to Ananda, and I can
hold
see
on how, to your hat.
I can see how this would be really popular in India, but is there a similar course maybe like this out of the Bible that might resonate?
Well, we might do it that way because it's the principles that are important, and I'm sure we could find these themes in, because Master wrote an explanation of the deeper meanings of the Bible too, so it might well be based derivative from the Bible. So that's certainly something that's possible.
Yeah, I think we'll keep the principles but change the application according to the openness of the audience. But Gita Navratna would not find wide acceptance and openness here in the West. It wouldn't be meaningful. Whereas in India, if we don't tie it to the Gita, people will feel that it's just something shallow.
You know, when we were in India last year, we were talking with some friends who are kind of high-level educators and consultants. It started a number of universities and educational and business consultants. And we were talking about Mahabharata and Gita, and they said something that absolutely shocked us. And we thought, whoa, we have got to share Master's explanation of the Gita, because this one man said, when he was growing up, he said Mahabharata was like a bad word because it was understood as a fight between family, among family members. And so he said, when my brother and I would get in a fight, my mother would say, oh, you're having a Mahabharata. And I thought, what?
You have the Mahabharata on their bookshelf.
Yeah, I don't know if those of you from India, if you experienced anything like that, but we were just shocked when we heard that, and we thought, oh my gosh, we have... Sagar, did you ever hear anything like that? Whoa. Anyway, we just thought, we have got to bring Master's explanation of the Gita back, because if they're seeing it only as a rivalry among family members and kind of something discouraged, you know, it's like, whoa.
I am a samurai and warrior, and everything that I do, I focus on the enemy, the one enemy. look at it like a hawk that's going after a flock of birds. He doesn't chase all the birds. He chases one down until he gets it. And that's how I look at life and problems. And recently, I'm new on the path as well. And recently, I've learned to not focus on the issues, but to focus on the light. Today, we went through a checklist of issues. And now I'm looking at a battlefield of warriors, and I don't know who to focus on. Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Good question. Jyotish will answer.
First, try to clarify. You know, so right now you probably have a list of potential warriors. Try to clarify what the real ones you want to fight are. Because you can't, just as you say, you can't chase a whole flock of birds. So get it down, if not to a flock, get it down to a few birds. And then I would suggest that you sit in meditation and do essentially the exercise that we did together, where you raise your mind and then look at your list and take the first one that feels like it's the one you should really work on. Let your superconscious mind, you won't be in full superconsciousness, but let your raised consciousness identify the thing that you should focus on as opposed to your conscious mind. And then, so then work with the same process. So if you focusing on some particular aspect in yourself, try to read Master's teaching so that you understand what that really is. And there are many, we have wonderful staff here. You could talk with any of the staff here. They could help you in the understanding phase of what that issue or what that warrior is about. And then you will need to go through the next process or the next step of owning that, owning that you're going to really work on that, and that that warrior is not external, it's internal. And so that you need to own the fact that you're working on yourself by working on this warrior. And then, you know, the next stage is, and there are wonderful, great techniques, the highest techniques, to help us work on that self-transformation process. And then, of course, you've got to commit. Just as if you're a martial artist, you don't learn martial arts in one day. It's a long process of learning and continuing. And so if you do that, I think it'll clarify for you.
You know, one other thing to bear in mind. What is your name?
David.
Okay, nice to meet you, David. Once you master an understanding of how to overcome limitations in one area, you have that skill. And it's a lot easier as you go forward. So in a way, that's very, very useful to have that very focused mind and really put energy into working with one warrior. And then when you feel, it's not a different process. It's the same process of feeling, where is that negative quality within me? Where does it reside in my feelings, in my thoughts, in my psyche, in my body? And then try to identify it and release it. And once you really get a handle on it, then the rest of them kind of, it becomes easier. When in Autobiography of a Yogi, Master tells when he was studying under his guru, Swami Sri Yukteswar, they were studying Patanjali's Yoga Sutras, and they just focused on one for months and months and months. And then, you know, they, which in the West we would never think of doing, but they just got so many layers and layers and layers, deeper layers of meaning. And then after a certain point, Sri Yukteswar said, we don't need to study anymore. by understanding how to go deep in this one, you understand the whole rest of the book. So that's helpful on the spiritual path to know. It isn't an endless, it's not like a video game where, you know, the guys keep coming and coming and coming and coming. You kill one, and then you get a sense of how to work with overcoming limitations. And when you, and then you can, it's a skill, just like martial arts. You always, you know, like you learn a certain move, and you know when to use it, and you don't have to keep relearning it. So does that make sense? When you learn that skill of overcoming a limitation, you always have that ability. And
another exercise that we could have done this morning, but we just had to pick and choose because of time limitations. But with the problem and solution that we had, another thing that we could have done is when you had the problem, and when after meditation you had the solution, then look at the problem and try to feel, not intellectualize, try to feel where in your body that problem is seated. And where in your body, feel, don't think, feel where the solution is seated, and then connect those two points. And for many people, that's very, very effective in neutralizing the energy. But as I say, we just had to pick and choose between. But honestly, there's a whole quiver full of solution arrows on this path.
By the way, we want to thank Shanti so much for helping to organize and plan our time here. It's been lovely. And Marcel and Connie for the, Mahavir and Connie for the remarkable lunch that they made for us.
David, first of all, soon, very soon now, you should quit calling yourself new. David's a Kriyabon for a while now, who's been here for a fair amount of time.
No Kriyabon is a newbie.
Yeah. I want to ask you, too, though, if in terms of what David was saying, he's saying, I always focused on a problem where there was an enemy and I went after it. Being on this path, I've learned to look at the light. Now you're having me look at a problem. And I just, I'm asking if this is a reasonable, also an important aspect of that is that it's so different in life. We're not just looking at a problem. We didn't suddenly go back to problems. We're holding now every issue up into the light. So it feels different to me than, gee, just when I thought I was going to get to look at the light, I'm looking at problems again. It's a whole new way. I mean, is that...
Yeah, go on.
Just to say, the whole real process of self-transformation is to get your consciousness to a higher level. If you just look at problems, it stays stuck at the level that that problem arose from. So all of these techniques are meant to raise our consciousness. Most importantly, Kriya raises our consciousness. And if we offer in to that, don't think about the problem, think about the light or the unity or whatever, and offer that issue into that. You don't have to go through a rational process to untangle a lot of knots. The mind is in many ways for overcoming a problem. The mind is our enemy, not our friend. But it's still what we have to work with. So we have to maybe start there and help identify where the kinks of that flow are. That's really what we're trying to do. It's not that these problems exist as problems. They exist as kinks to the flow of upward moving energy. And so if we identify where that kink is in the hose, we might be able to untwist it. But the solution is not in the kink. The solution is in the flow of energy.
So
it's well stated that you know, that really, ultimately, we don't need any of this kind of exercise if we can get our consciousness in a high enough state. I'll tell you a fun little story. This is about a great saint who was contemporaneous with Trilanga Swami, the one master mentions, you know, the big fellow that weighed 300 pounds and walked around nude, and the police were always trying to lock him up. And anyway, this man, Trilok, they were great buddies and they traveled around together at times. So Trilok, early on in his life, who also lived a very, you know, hundreds of years, he, early on in his life, he went through rigorous training and then became enlightened. But he kept that enlightenment hidden. And at one time, this man from a village came and Trilok, just a wandering sadhu, helped him with some problem. And the man said, oh, you must come home. You must stay with us. You must be with us. And so Trilok came and he stayed with this family in the village. And the people in the village just looked at him as kind of a beggar who was using this really fine family and just taking advantage. And so they denigrated him and had no respect whatsoever. And he just didn't bother at all. Finally, the time came when he was ready to leave. And he came out and there were a group of Brahmins and they had a big ball of Brahmin thread and it was all tangled up. And he said, you know, they were working on it. And he said, well, you know, the scriptures say that the Gayatri Mantra will untangle problems. Why don't you chant the Gayatri Mantra?
Which is what we did when we threw
our... in part why we do that in fire ceremonies. So why don't you just chant the Gayatri Mantra? And they said, oh, we already tried that. That doesn't work. That's old stuff doesn't work. And Trilok chanted the Gayatri Mantra and it just, the whole tangled ball just fell into a neat kind of a pattern, whatever. It was no longer tangled. But the point here being that higher consciousness untangles without him ever having to go into each of those knots. It just, higher consciousness just works its magic. And so ultimately, the real solution is not the inner battle, it's self-realization. And that's why that progression goes through that. But if we can go straight to self-realization, we don't need the rest of the steps getting there.
I loved what you told us before about this new system, which was we will all be Jivan Muktas in this lifetime. also that you stated the goal really of this is to get to self-realization, because there really isn't anything that we teach specifically, though that's we have that as in our minds. I really like the idea that we're going to actually tie it to that and then also tie it to everyday life. So this first step was like bringing the yamas and niyamas into something that is real by just addressing it in a particular problem and a solution, a way to resolve it with a solution. So I'm very excited.
Good, good. No, it's, you know, in our discussions over time, and particularly in last week, we really reached a point of really exhilaration, feeling like, I'll be honest with you, Master and Babaji are just creating this magnificent system, and we're just trying to catch it, you know? And why are they doing it? Because Lahiri said, can't we share Kriya with everyone? The suffering men and women of this world don't have any tools to find true happiness and meaning in life. And we just thought, this really, because, you know, here we have these wonderful teaching centers and temples in America and India. And, you know, many people come, but many people don't come because they don't want to enter a spiritual environment. They think, oh, that's not what I want. But they do want something. And this could be just what they want. And so to bring it in a way that people say, oh, yeah, I can do that. That interests me. So we really felt how this is a very big part of fulfilling the mission of the masters and for our age is to make the Gita relevant. And someone just wrote us an email just as we were starting these meetings. We started them on Sunday, actually. And it was totally about something else, but she said, a woman said, she now lives at the village, but she was living at our Sacramento community. And she said, the first time I went into the Sacramento temple, Swami was there. It's the first time I'd ever met him. And he was just launching the essence of the Gita. And she said, I was so captured by his enthusiasm and his magnetism. And he held up the essence of the Gita and he said, we are going to take India by storm with this book. And she said, I just said, what can I do? What can I do? And from then on, she became a part of Ananda. But he saw this as a... And, you know, again, we don't want to limit it just to India, but that's where we'll start because it's all beta. You know, we're all testing. Does this work? Does this exercise work? Does this way of teaching it work? And so we have to let you know that you were kind of guinea pigs this morning.
Yeah, we'd like feedback, actually.
Yeah. What worked, what didn't work.
How this morning worked and what worked and what didn't.
But anyway, all that to say is it just feels like this is, it's like something is clarifying about how to present these teachings in a way that really can be universal. And it's very exciting.
Just to tag team on so many, you know, good comments that have been shared of the excitement of this, but I was reflecting on how things are continually transforming so that they're ever new. And essentially the teachings are the same, right? From the time of the Rig Vedas. And Master came and presented them in a certain way that the audience was ready for at that time. You know, be prosperous in your business, be healthy, whatever it might be. And then Swamiji wrote all of these books, that Gita course, the course that on prosperity that Haridas took to Indian corporations, all of that. And it feels like now this course is just again taking that and synthesizing it into something we can just use every day. So for feedback, the part that I really enjoyed is you're almost forcing ourselves, quote unquote, to really do some self-examination. I think many of us, we've sat through interesting seminars and so many classes and we agree. But somehow I feel like just that little taste we got this morning of what are my qualities? What are my underneath qualities? Versus we could all probably, you know, quote and we've memorized the yamas and niyamas and can say them. But what does it mean to me? What is that subtle layer that's holding me back? And I think you're getting, through this course, you're just forcing us to go there, which maybe others have gone, but I've not gone to that level. Yeah. You know, to really examine, because if I want to break through, I want that self-transformation. I have to go at that level. And I love what you said, Davey, now just when you overcome that quality in one instance, when you really do that tendency, you really overcome it. So I think it's going to be very powerful with these very personalized exercises and just not a beautiful manual. We love all of that. We love all of that. But there's just something about going through the journey, which I'm just excited about and can't wait, really. So
thank you. Yeah. Most of our talk this week was what kind of exercises, what kinds of things can we do to bring this out of theory and into a personal transformation and do that over a 3-day period, at least to get the process started. Because if the people don't leave that course feeling transformed, we will have failed in our job. But a lot of it is not knowledge, as you're saying. Devotees can overuse knowledge, and it becomes a defense mechanism against doing the work. Like, you know, memorizing the Bible and being able to quote every scripture and then going out and robbing your neighbor. You know, you've got to get it off of that theoretical level and into your own spine and your own process of transformation. And that's what we're trying to do with the course.
And you know, also, the more collectively people can sincerely and openly commit and begin transforming themselves, I mean, how is this world going to change? It's not going to change by laws and rules and politics. I mean, we can see it's a total dead end. Whatever your political persuasion is, it's not how the world is going to change. But it's going to change by... And I really believe that those of us who have been drawn to Master's teachings and to Ananda in this life, we're part of the solution. We're part of... Swami has said, and so many of the things he said, we didn't know how to relate to them when he said them. Just for example, at the Hermitage Gardens, you know, this year we'll have between, I don't know, we just hit the 12,000 visitor mark and there's still 2 weeks to go. And so we may hit 15,000 people. About, I don't know when he said it, but Swami said, busloads of people will come to these gardens. And we just didn't know how to think about that. But it's true now. I mean, busloads come. But he also said he believes in history, looking back at our period, will say that the most important, I mean, this is hard to say, but you can only go by his track record, which is pretty good. And he said the most important thing happening in the world today will be seen as the movement of Ananda. So, and what does that mean? Does it mean buildings? Does it mean organization? Does it mean, you know, no, it doesn't mean any of that. It means the personal transformation of many, many people globally. And that's what's happening.
And many modalities, you know, Ananda combines teachings, it combines friendship, satsang.
Community.
But most of all, it is really focused on taking the teachings and applying them in practical ways. And change of modality is what's going to be important.
Do you want to share what that Swami David... or do you want me to?
Sure.
Okay. There is an Indian Swami. He's a rather young man. Narayani mentions him in her book about Swamiji. I believe his name is Devaduti. And anybody correct me if I have that wrong. Sagar always can correct me when I'm wrong. Anyway, he's good at it, though. He always gets it right. Anyway, he's not in our lineage at all. He's probably in his late 30s, early 40s. He's a forest hermit, and he lives most of the year just in a little ashram in the forest. But for a month or two every year, he comes out of the forest, and he has an ashram, and he has devotees. And he has satsang, and he calls people to be with him. And I don't know how he knew about Swamiji, but he came to Italy to meet him. Is that where he met him? Or was it India? India. It must have been India, because he wouldn't go to Italy. So he met Swamiji in India, and he was very, very impressed with him. And he said, you all don't know what you have in him. And then about 2 months ago, this Swami came out of... Oh, and then when Swami, the day he was passing, this other Swamiji was passing, this other Indian Swami asked one of his disciples, "How's Swami Kriyananda doing? I feel a shift in his energy." And then he passed the next day. But so about 2 months ago, this man, Narayani and Sherjo, who they met him when he came to visit Swamiji in India, they received word that the Swami wanted them to come to visit him in his ashram in the city. And they were sent tickets, and they went. And he happened to be in silence at the time, but he was writing everything down. And he said some very interesting things. One, he said that, quoting, he said, "The world, starting this year, the world is going to be going through very difficult times, climatically, disease, epidemic spreading, and, world catastrophes." He said, "Starting this year, we'll see." And he said it will last for 40 years. But he also said that, and he's not in our lineage. He doesn't do Kriya. He's not part of our guru lineage. But he said, "The teachings of Babaji and Master through Ananda are one of the most powerful, pure sources of spiritual training in the world today, and they would survive during this period of chaos, and in fact, they would be the religion of the future." So take it as you will, but this, and he was in silence, but he wrote it all down and gave.
Put quite a lot of emphasis on the fact that Babaji is the one who initiated this whole conscious movement, and that it's come down through our lineage. And Babaji is widely revered in India, and not just by our line. So with his blessing, whatever he blesses is going to manifest, but he personally chose this lineage as a carrier wave for the release of Kriya into the world. And so that doesn't mean only Ananda, but the Ananda lineage, but that as we go through this turbulent period, it will become increasingly important, these teachings, and really just what we're talking about today. How do you go through really difficult, turbulent times? By raising your consciousness. And so these tools and techniques to raise consciousness are the real solution, not politics, not war, not conflict of any kind. The world has plenty of that. That's what causes problems. It's not the solution. The solution is the upliftment of consciousness. And both personal, as we've been talking all morning, and culturally worldwide.
And he also said this, you can ask your question, Ramani, just finishing off because this was important too. He said, "You do have no idea what you had in Swamiji." He said it was very, very difficult for him to kind of be in this world and interact with you all and sort of as he did, kind of a friend and all the things he did. He said he really had to hold his consciousness down to do all that. And he said I feel like Swamiji was Beda Vyasa, who wrote the Mahabharata and the Gita, and because of writing such brilliant books and expositions. And he said, "And I also feel in another life he was Thomas Aquinas, who also wrote wonderful scriptural treatises." Anyway, just share for who knows, but he seemed to be a man not looking for anything, looking for a following or money or anything, just a person of deep spiritual integrity. So Ramani had a question. Wait.
I heard about that man, seeing Narayani, and from Savitri, and so she was mentioning that when he came, well, anyway, it's written in Narayani's book, and almost the last few pages, because
yes,
it was just before they left India. He was very sick. He went to Italy, and then he passed.
That's right.
And the man had actually wanted to see him another time, but
right.
he was too sick.
Yeah.
But the thing that was interesting to me was that Swami's judgment of the man just shows up at the house. That's how she wrote it. And she said, so she thought, no, he can't see you because he's taking a nap. You know, he needs that nap. You know, so she goes into the room and just kind of quietly says to Swami, there's a Swami here. There's, a man here. And he wants to see you. And he sat, and she thought she would just skip it. And he sat right up and he said, show him in. And he went right out.
Yeah.
Because
he was incredible. But this other part that we added about this being the lineage of the, that just came in the last 2 months, so that wasn't in the book. But another time, people always, where Gary was just telling us this story, we always tried to protect Swami, and, you know, he had pretty advanced diabetes, so he was not supposed to eat sugar. And Gary made these incredible pecan pies, which Swami loved. And he came over and he said, when Swami was visiting here in Palo Alto, he said to Durga and me, can I make Swami a pie? And we said, no, we can't have sugar, And then Leela called Gary. And was it Leela who called you, or how did you hear? Oh, Durga had to, and said, you know, Swami wants a pie. and he did. Gary said, I realize he did it for me, not because the pie was... There was another story. We're rambling, but it's fun to talk about Swami. They were trying to protect him. This was in India. And a stranger came with his son and wanted to see Swami. And the people said, no. And Swami was upstairs, and he heard them downstairs. I mean, they weren't yelling, but they were just saying, well, he's resting. And he came down. He said, oh, of course I'll see them. It was very touching. The man, it was an older man and his grown son. And the grown son had terminal cancer. And they had just come for Swami's blessing. That's all they wanted. Swami blessed the son, and we never saw them again. And Swami was very strong with everyone. And he said, don't you keep people from seeing me. That's why I'm here. And he was very strong with them. So anyway.
I just want to say to everybody, this is your moment. We won't see them for a year. So if you have...
Not true.
Well, we'll see them. That's not true. But they won't be sitting on our dais just like this, waiting for your questions. So if you have any questions about your path or anything that you'd like to ask Jyotish and Devi, now is the time.
I just wanted to make another comment about the process that we went through this morning and give you some feedback. I've watched people who are in therapy to improve themselves, and I've watched, and I myself have taken classes, many classes, but what you gave us this morning were those four little points, how to incorporate it into our spirituality and create a solution, which is missing from every other modality that I've been exposed to.
Thank
because
you.
They'll analyze
right.
and tell you, and you'll decide what you are or who you are, but finding a way to change that. And that's what those four little questions did.
Yeah. Very good.
Yeah.
Very good, thank you. There's a question there?
Yeah.
So this question is not completely formulated yet, but I would just put it out there and we can all think about it together, I guess. So there are a few things where we are not, let's say, naturally attracted towards, and there are a few things which we are naturally attracted towards. And among these two categories, there are things good for us or the positive things that we all try to rise to, and then there are things that we should ideally, you know, not go into or stay away from. Now, the whole notion of choice, that whether or not there is something which I like, if I relinquish or give that up, if I am doing it by choice that I was fully capable of having it if I want it, or whether I am releasing it by the knowledge that it is not good for me, but I'm still not at the point where I'm just giving it up by choice, in the sense that even if I wanted, probably it would get, you know, take me a couple of years or 3 years or maybe lifetime to get there and achieve that thing or get to the point where I am capable of achieving that goal, let's say. So the question is that whether it's a sensible thing, like what is the thought process that you should go through in order to decide by scriptures, by great people saying that, hey, this is not good for you, and this is something that you should stay away from, and that's why you don't go there, or go there and be capable of probably, you know, doing whatever you wanted to do with it anyway, and then probably you say that, hey, you know what, this is not interesting, I knew it all along anyway. So now it is, you know, an easy choice to say that, yeah, I am not interested. I give up. So what's the thought process that you would suggest? Sorry for the long question. That's why I said it was not well formulated.
No, the question wasn't long. The preamble was long.
Well, you know, honestly, many things are determined by past karma and past tendencies. So what we have is a moment in time, which is the present, that continually moves along. So all we have is the present moment. Even though we think we have the past, we think we have the future, when we get to the future, we'll still only have the present moment. So the only thing that we can do is in the present moment, try to aspire to something higher of self-transformation. What works in that process? We have a whole tool belt. We have the mind, we have the heart, we have all of the spiritual tools. So whatever is coming up in the present moment, try to use whatever tool that you have that can move the energy upward. So it's not necessarily that one is better, and many of your tools will be according to what you've used in the past. So as a friend of ours said, to a carpenter, every problem looks like a nail because they've got a hammer in their tool belt. And so depending on what tools you have developed in the past, you will try to use that tool. It isn't the tool that matters. It's the intention to move the energy in an upward direction.
And also, this story came to mind of one of Master's disciples, direct disciples. The Bronze Buckaroo, what's the name? The Bronze Buckaroo, what was his real name?
Herb Jeffries,
yeah. So he was a Hollywood movie star and singer, kind of a nightclub, big band singer and so forth. And so he had a pretty worldly life. But he was sincere, and he had kriya. And he came, one time Master tells the story that he came... he was telling the story on a YouTube video, right? That he was talking with Master, and he said, you know, all my life in religion, they told me, all I heard was can'ts. You can't do this and you can't do that. If I join your religion, your church, I want to know, what can I do? And so the Master, he just knew how to work with people. You know, he was a master of that as well. And he said, do you like to smoke? And Herb Jeffries said, well, yeah, I do. You may continue. He said, do you like to drink alcohol? He said, well, yeah, I do. He said, you may continue. He said, do you enjoy the company of women? And he goes, well, I have to admit I do. You may continue, but I'll guarantee, the Master concluded, and then Herb Jeffries was feeling really, well, I like this church. But and then he said, but I'll guarantee you, if you practice Kriya Yoga, you won't want to do any of those things. And so it's not a matter of, outward religion. It's a difference between outward religion and inner transformation. And all the churches in the world say, this is a sin, and you can't do this, and you'll be, condemned if you do that, all that stuff. But the path of Kriya Yoga is just saying, raise the energy, and then you say, I don't really want to do those things. I was talking with a young guy who had a pretty well teenage years, who was outgrown him, and he said, I don't know why I did all those things. I really didn't like it all that much. And then we were saying, well, it would have been nice if you could have recognized that earlier, but whatever. And again, work with the inner energy. Kriya Yoga is an amazing thing. I received first time initiation in 1971, in the spring of 71. But so it's been a while. But I feel like all the time I'm learning what it is, and the power of it, and how to go deeper with it, and that's why I said one little sentence earlier in our time together, where I said the real inner battle is in the spine, and that's what you experience with Kriya Yoga. You feel like you start getting a handle on how to draw the energy into the inner spine, and there's a force of resistance. It says, no, we don't want to let go. We don't want to let go of our attachments and likes and dislikes and desires and our will and our feelings and all of those things that we identify as ourselves. But like Kriya Yoga, it pulls the energy in, and little by little, you just say, I can let go. I can really just go inside, and I'm not going to lose anything. And that's the imperishable soul. That's the first two gems from the Gita, where you realize it'll fall away, and don't beat yourself up about it. Do your best, but do Kriya Yoga.
I just wonder if we could take one more moment with you. There's a lot going on in this whole big wide world of Ananda. And here are two great souls who are really living their entire lives to meet the needs from as much a place of superconsciousness and superconscious solutions as possible. It's an enormous task, just lived in each moment, but it's huge. We are, as a spiritual community worldwide, in the midst of a lot of transformation. And I wonder if we could all just take a moment before Jyotish and Devi leave today. Let's all stand up and let's really focus our attention and our energy as much as possible, opening ourselves up as channels for God's energy, Master's energy, for Swamiji's vibration and presence to fill them and flow through them day by day, moment by moment, as they really make themselves available to this worldwide community. Here they are, framed by the Masters and by that beautiful spiritual eye. And let's chant Om three times.
Standing, we thank you, but let's also chant Om and send out blessings into the world that these great teachings of Babaji and our line of masters can reach many, many people globally to help a movement of self-realization to transform this world. Om.
Thank you all, and we'll see you tomorrow.